Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds good.
A few things about John, and then we'll talk about a lot of things that happened this week. And I'll talk about the releases. 28 guys got released, 28 talents.
Insane.
And agents. Well, he had nothing for them to do. He's not running shows. I'm sure they weren't on every show. Those agents, they just go to TV, I think, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And see, Lance Storm, he just went there not too long ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A couple of months?
4 months, yep.
And he closed his school and everything, right?
Yes.
How long has Shane Helms been there? He's only been there like a year, year and a half, right?
Yeah, about a year and a half, yep.
And then we'll talk about Lawler.
Yes, yes.
Making that. Do you think that was a racist statement?
I don't, but I don't know. I got a pretty thick skin, so I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say I don't think it's racist. Because not everything you say has to have a racist meaning behind it.
Right, of course.
Lawler is not responsible for what you hear, really, unless it's too bad. But he is responsible for what he said, and I'm sure Lawler didn't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yes, I agree.
But, boy, Lawler used to say some rough stuff in Memphis, buddy. They was going to cancel the show one Saturday morning, unless he went out there and apologized for what he said. And this, of course, is about a black guy. and I forgot what he said. It was something about, you know, how do you babysit a black baby? That's what he said. You know what he said?
No, this is great. What is it?
You wet them on the lips and stick them on the wall.
Oh, my God.
Oh, they, now I'm not going to tell that on air.
No, yeah.
But God, boys, that telephone line lit up. I bet that, probably in about 10 minutes, probably got 100 calls. So they said, well, you got a choice. We can end the show right now. You can go out there and apologize for making that statement. I wish I still had that on tape. God. But this, I don't even know if tapes was even people. 1976, when did those tapes didn't come out until much later than that, right?
Yeah,
About 79, 78?
Yes.
And I doubt if anybody would even have that. Let's talk about the Ronda Rousey thing.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Which I think was very disrespectful, really. She didn't shy away from taking the money, did she?
New, and billions of dollars.
And she, I don't know, how much did you think she made?
Probably about $2 or $3 million, I bet, in a year, something like that.
I don't think she made that much.
No, really?
I don't think so. Because she wasn't doing nothing else, because her UFC career stopped. When she got beat that second time, screw it. She ain't a wife done with her. See, she had that one takedown she could get him. If she didn't get that takedown early, those girls just knock her out.
Yes.
That first girl had those long arms. She just beat the shit out of Rousey. So, anyway. But it was real. That makes a difference. So, I guess. Okay. I want to talk about a little bit. WWE, I'm in Florida. They got a lot of heat here about deeming WWE an essential business.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I heard some people just outside I went outside and I heard some people talking over the fence. They said, now what makes wrestling a central business? What, you know, they're pissed off. And I don't think that's a good look for Trump, and it's not a damn good look for damn Vince. But I think I'll have to give Meltzer his due. I think Vince is kind of fearful that Fox will say, well, you're not doing live shows, so we can't honor that contract. So.
Yep, totally agree. Yep.
I think that's what they did there. What else we got? And he declared bankruptcy. All right, then we'll go to the. I'm gonna list the top five territories, not by money, how much money you made there, but how much fun they were to work and how much entertainment value they gave the fans. So,
okay.
And you saw it, didn't you? Memphis, Puerto Rico, Continental.
Florida and Knoxville.
Yeah. And yeah. Continental was actually the gem of them all that nobody ever knows about. That's the golden nugget.
Mm-hmm. Great territory. Great atmosphere,
it,
too.
It was. And it's fun to work there, you know. And we're going to talk about we'll talk about Lawler and some questions. He says, what do you think about Lawler instead of Ross? Well, I'll answer that early. And Jerry Jarrett, I'll talk about him. Which promoter gave the best payoffs? I'll answer that. How was the WWC environment at work after Brody? Well, hell, it wasn't good before then. So, because I didn't go back there for 6 years after that anyway.
Yeah, yep.
And then the longest match I was ever in was an hour and 15 minutes. They said it was 48 minutes, 49 minutes of that 26 fall Texas death match. I'm pretty sure it was about an hour and 15 by the time we walked out there and got back. And I'm going to tell a story. I bet you hadn't even heard it. How did working first begin? I heard that from a couple of old-timers on a trip from, I think it's Savannah back to Atlanta. And they told this story. And it's, I don't know if it's true, but it's the way they explained it. It could be true. You ever heard that story?
No. Nope.
Well, then you have to listen to the damn podcast. Okay. And I got four here. And I want to talk about my guests. You can ask me that. Hey, then I heard you had some guests scheduled coming up. And I do, because I talked to, you know, that fucking best. This is the second time he stiffed me on this fucking shit. I'm getting about tired of his fucking ass. Ricky Morton wants to come on. Ricky Morton wants to come on.
Ooh, love him. He's the best.
Evan Husney.
Mm-hmm. Know him pretty well. Yep.
Dark Side of the Ring. He wants to come on. Bradshaw wants to come on.
Nice.
And,
been trying to get a hold of him forever. Nice.
And Jim Cornette.
Oh, my boy.
And Osei, I did. It was like the after show for the Eddie Mansfield. The, you know, it was since it was about Eddie Mansfield, you know. Well, it was about David Charles slapping Stossel.
Mm-hmm.
But Eddie Mansfield fairly prominently. And Jim Cornette, I think, will probably, or if he can find the motherfucker, he'll go find him and put a hit out on him or hit him himself. Because that fucking Mansfield said, I'll beat the living fuck out of fucking Cornette. Man, when he hears that, he's going to go insane. All right, brother. Let's get ready to go and be talkative and be up, and let's get this done.
Yes.
Okay. Stop, dog. I'm going to kill that little son of a bitch before the day's over. Okay? A lot of things to talk about today. Let's go. Quiet. I didn't hear a sound before I started talking. Now I'm going to get ready to talk, and now all the sound comes up.
Whenever you are ready.
Oh, okay. I was waiting on you. Okay. 3, 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to University of Dutch. I'm Dutch Mantel. I'm joined by my co-host today, Mr. John Paz, who also hosts the show Two Man Power Trip. And, John, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Dutch. Can't complain. How the hell are you doing?
Oh, and I'm doing fine. I'm stuck off down here in Florida. And I want you to remember my address and my telephone number because everybody's on lockdown everywhere across the United States. So I think 600-pound life, they need to know how to get a hold of me. And all this is over because I'm going to waddle out the door. Oh, my God, here he comes. Oh, he's terrible. But I want to say that this is a show that I actually kind of prepared for, John, if you can imagine that.
Sure.
But the music you heard, folks, when you when you first came over to the show today was Mr. John Prine. And Mr. John Prine was actually a hero of mine in the musical world, probably considered Nashville royalty, even though he wasn't really a country singer. He wasn't even that good a singer. His lyrics were just tremendous if you just listen to them. And I'm going to give away my age here. But you know how long I've been listening to Mr. John Prine, John? 50 years.
Whoa.
I found him in 1970. I was in the Army. And me and this other guy, he had heard of this John Prine guy. And we got to listening to him. And that's how long I've been listening to John Prine. And I followed him ever since. I mean, he really hit it. He started kicking it off in the mid-70s. And he was found, I think, by Kris Kristofferson and Paul Anka in a little club in New York. He was playing. And when they got there, it was about 2:30 in the morning. And they wanted to hear him. And they were already packed up. John Prine was ready to walk out the door. He was waiting for his money. He reminds me of the wrestling business. You're waiting for your money. And they asked the club owner, hey, we want to hear him sing a few more songs. Can we do that? And he said, yeah. And he went back on stage, set up his stuff, his little mic, and they pulled up a couple of tables, served a few drinks, and he played 7 songs all the way through. And they heard him finish. And they said, hey, can we hear those 7 songs again? They liked them that well. And the next morning he got a call from, I forgot the guy's name, a big record producer, and he said that's how it started. And he said, once it started, he said it was like magic. He says he came to Nashville, and he said the rest is history. But anyway, he passed away, and he passed away on April the 7th, April the 8th, and Nashville was very sad. I was sad, and I never met him, but I almost had a chance to meet him. I was at this place one night, this bar or something, and he had just left when I came in. And a lot of times in Nashville, John, if you go there, sometimes these big stars, people know who they are. They will come into a club, and they'll go on stage for like a song or two, then they'll leave, and they don't charge for that. They just do it, and you get a lot of great entertainment in Nashville. And I spent a big part of my life in Nashville, and I love the area. I love the music, and it's a town that hasn't overgrown itself, and it's a town that hasn't forgotten its roots, so I'm glad for that. But anyway, Mr. John Prine, you're a big hero of mine, and so rest in peace, and hope to see you on the other side. So, well, anyway, let's get to the news here.
All right.
I'm reading, very seldom do I read a lot of news, but this shocked me. I read that WWE this week released. Now, this is a vote for the people listening. We're doing this on a Wednesday, so there might be some more news happening Thursday, and you'll be hearing it on Friday. The WWE releases this week. They released 28 talents. I don't think they've ever had a talent release that big. And they released Drake Maverick and Curt Hawkins and Anderson and Gallows. EC3 released him. Leo Rush, Eric Heath Slater.
Mm-hmm.
Aiden English, I'm not that familiar with him. Kurt Angle, which really, really surprised me that they released Kurt. And referee Mike Chioda, who's been there at least 20 years.
30. Eric, since 1989.
Has he been there that long?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. And of course, the two Puerto Rican kids, Primo and Epico, released them. Mike Kanellis and Maria Kanellis, and Zack Ryder, which is also surprising. So how long had Zack been there?
14 or 15 years, yeah.
Damn, that's a long time. And he made money for 14 years, whether they used him or not. I mean,
yeah, oh yeah.
He wouldn't have made that much money working independence anywhere. So he would just go to TV and then go on the road and go to TV, and you know he. To me, I think he had almost the perfect gig, to tell you the truth. And these are some more. This is what surprised me. They released the agents.
Yeah.
Billy Kidman, Mike Rotunda, which Mike's been there at least 30 years. Hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Early 90s, yeah. And all
Dave
the way through.
Dave Finley, Pat Buck, which I only met Pat one time. Sean Devary, he hadn't been there that long, but they released him. Here's another one that surprised me. Scott Armstrong released him. And Shane Helms and Lance Storm. And I think we were talking about Lance Storm before we went on the air, weren't we?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yep, his school closed and he worked there for 4 months, yep.
Yeah, he only worked like, I was saying, 4 or 5 months.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you get a job, and all of a sudden you get fired. Now we get back to the lockdown part that's behind all these releases. And I'll get to another part in a minute that's, you know, I'm in Florida right now. The people down here are really talking about the WWE. Not in a good way either, kind of in a bad way. Because all these guys got released because they're not running any shows at all. They're doing the Monday nights at the Performance Center. They're doing the Wednesday night NXT at the Performance Center. And they're doing SmackDown at the Performance Center. So, and they're probably not packing those cards that much. And I guess these guys, I mean, the level of work or the amount of work for these guys didn't match what they were paying them, I guess. So they sent them home. Now, some of them says they're furloughed. What does furlough mean? Just laid off for a while? Is that what
So you're basically laid off for a while. You're still technically working for the company, but you're really not getting your full pay or what you would be getting paid if you were a full-time employee. But you're not allowed to work anywhere else.
Well, this is what I'm going to bring up next. So I was talking to my daughter the other day. And I said, I think WWE, they're going to continue doing Raw at the Performance Center. She said, oh, no, they can't. My daughter knows everything. I said, well, that's what they said. Well, they can't do it because the state of Florida, they closed everything. Anybody with more than, you know, you can't do that. So I'm reading, and yeah, the governor of Florida deemed WWE a necessary
essential business. Yeah,
and
isn't it essential?
It is essential, yes. But I'm thinking, wait a minute. No, maybe my definition of essential, I would think essential would be doctors,
pharmacies.
Grocery stores, probably convenience stores for gas. They probably need that. And medical technicians, emergency rooms, fire departments, police, things like that are essential. But a wrestling show that they're going to tape, I don't know how that can be deemed essential. Now, this is where the problem is coming in. Because Vince and Mr. Donald Trump are big, big buddies. And that's no secret.
Mm-hmm.
He gave Linda a seat on his cabinet when he first got in. And, of course, the governor of Florida owes his election victory almost 100% to Trump. So... And if that's the way politics works, folks, you know, and I'm not a Democrat. I'm going to say that. I didn't like Hillary. I mean, I like some Democrats. I just didn't like Hillary. And I wasn't really crazy about Trump, but he was a lesser of two evils.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
But I don't think this helps WWE at all. And I don't think it helps Trump at all, to tell you the truth, because what that does, that gives unnecessary ammunition to your opponents. And believe me, come election time in November here in Florida, that's all you're going to be hearing if nothing changes. It's just to say, well, they gave Vince McMahon a special deal. While all the rest of us were locked down and couldn't go to work, he gave the billionaire all these perks and all these advantages that regular people like you and me, we don't get. Which, and I have to say, that's almost a talking point that you can't debate. It happened. So I don't know. We'll see where that What do you think about that, John? You think that's, am I halfway right on that?
It's pretty crazy that they're deemed an essential business, and like the happenings happened like the way they did. As far as Linda is in there, gave the governor $18.5 million, kind of paid him off, it seemed like, perhaps. Then Vince also.
But when I heard it, I watched the part back when he said it, and I didn't see anything racial about it. I guess you can put, you could tag a racist comment on a lot of things. But did you see it? That it, did you feel like it was racist?
Honestly, not at all. When he said it, I didn't think it was at all. And then when these people kind of replayed it and keep saying it, like the ramen noodle moon salt and the scent, you know, obviously it's called the scent on and stuff. I don't know. I just kind of chuckled. I didn't really think it was racist at all. It's just a kind of like an old man kind of joke, you know, like it's just, you know, it's old humor, you know, from back in the day.
Well, these people, they, you know, they'll call out anything.
Yes.
But
I
did hear that WWE went back and they did take that comment out of the Hulu broadcast that they do.
Right.
Now, what is Hulu? I want you to educate me in a second. And I'm sure a lot of people might not even know the difference, just like me. I'm ignorant on a lot of these things. But Hulu is just raw without the commercials. Is that it?
Yeah, and it's after the fact.
Shorter,
so it's not live, and it's, you get it through a streaming site, Hulu. Yep.
Isn't it much shorter, though?
I believe it is like, I don't even know how long it would be. I believe without the commercials, probably what, like 2 hours, something like that? Instead of three?
Well, it'd probably be an hour and 45 minutes because...
Right, exactly. Yeah, whatever
each hour show is either 42 or 43 minutes of actual content. That's what it is. So that gives them 16 minutes to 17 minutes to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
So that's how... If you do an hour show on anything that has commercials, it's along those lines. It's about 42 minutes of content and 16 minutes of commercial, what else they got. So when we used to do Memphis TV, and even though, and we did TNA, it was 42 minutes. Because
right.
I never timed the show. I gave it to, or they gave it to a referee who was actually much better at math than what I was. See, my job wasn't adding up numbers. My job was trying to create something that would be interesting enough that the people would actually stay with throughout the whole show, and we try to hold on the whole show so you can hold that rating. So,
right.
But and hey, one day, I'm gonna do a whole show. I don't know how many TNA fans we got out there, but they've been for 15 years as TNA.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I call it sometimes the gang that couldn't shoot straight. Sometimes we would have something, and all of a sudden, man, the rest of creative, which would be Vince and Jeff, sometimes Dixie. You know, when you've got something, stop tinkering with it. I mean, if you got the car tuned up, don't go ahead and do an oil change. I mean, don't put new tires on it. Don't do this. Don't do that. I mean, let it run the race the way you had it. Now you know exactly what you got on it. Now you need to know where to add or to keep going the same speed or whatever. But isn't that TNA, it'll be a good show when I start talking about TNA.
But what did you think Lawler's comments, going back to Jerry, did you think like any racist when you heard it originally? Did you think anybody was going to have a problem with it?
No, I didn't hear it originally. I read about it.
Oh. Okay.
Then I went, but you got to know Lawler. You know, and like you said, he's like, hey, we're the same age. Hell, we're done pushing 142. You know, but things like that were funny back in the day. They're still funny to me, kind of, because Lawler's just funny. Now, I'm sure he meant no ill will by saying that. But, you know, you get these, they call them snowflakes, I guess. You get them going, everything, they get up every morning, and I'm sure they go right to Twitter and say, God damn it, I don't know what to do with myself. I actually kind of feel pretty happy today. I can't live like that. I got to have something to piss me off. So they read something, probably what Trump wrote about 20 minutes earlier, and they get good and pissed off, and now they're ready to go face the day. You know, to me, if I had to change any other, I mean, get another job, you know what I would be? I would be a reporter, because you don't gotta chase anything down. You just gotta get up in the morning, sleep to about 6:30, 7, 8 o'clock, get up, pull up your Twitter feed, and just go right to Trump and see what he tweeted at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. That's all you gotta talk about, because that's all you're gonna report about all day long is what Trump said. Ah, son of a bitch, and blah blah blah, and he's this and that and the other. But I don't know, but that's what I would be. Here's the next thing. Ronda Rousey said something that was very disrespectful.
Yes.
About our business. Now it goes without saying, we know what wrestling is, but we enjoy it despite the fact. But for her to go out there and make that statement that she made, like, she said she enjoyed going out and have fake fights for fun. And she kind of knocked all the performers of WWE. And she kind of took up for her MMA buddies.
Yes.
But she didn't have any trouble taking the money that WWE offered her, did she?
Right, the millions that she got from WWE, yeah.
She didn't have anything bad to say about that. She took the money, but wants to go out there, and this is what pissed me off. She said, fake fights for fun, but she also says it wasn't the talent that she was working with her. That, hang on a minute, John, you're going to have to edit this.
Mm-hmm.
Chloe, take that dog in the bedroom before I strangle him. Open the door. He's in the hallway. Because I'm on my podcast now. I don't want him talking. Did you get him?
Do you want to keep
you done? No, I don't. I'm busy, baby. Okay. I get it. So where was I at, John?
Basically saying that Rousey is kind of taking the money, disrespecting the business, but then brings up her MMA buddies and, you know, basically they say how tough they are. And if, if she was fighting 300 times a year, you know.
But, you know, to me, what pissed me off more than anything else, she talked about the wrestling being fake, but she talked about how the fans irritated her.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't she realize that's how she makes money? You mean to tell me that, you know, you got to get people to like your character for you to sell merchandise. You got to get them to like you to come see you even have a fake fight. But I think she was very disrespectful, not only to the people that she worked with in WWE and to Vince and to all the rest of the talent, but she was disrespectful to the fans that like wrestling in general. Very disrespectful. And I don't know what the motive is for her to do that. To me, I think she's almost like the Hillary Clinton. She wants to look down on wrestling fans as is deplorables of the sports world. You ever been to an MMA fight, John?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few.
Well, they're not brain surgeons. And I'm not knocking them, but, you know, it's a different animal. It's a different animal than wrestling fans in general. To me, you know what I find wrestling fans are, I mean, I really like them because that's how I made my living for 30, 35, 40 years. But sometimes you can be sitting out there, and you find this anywhere. You'll find a doctor sitting there. You'll find a lawyer sitting there, a nurse sitting there, a lawyer sitting there. I mean, professional people that go and bring their kids and to be entertained. And then, of course, you got your truck drivers and just your people who just work, you know, everyday jobs. But that's what wrestling is to me. When I get in the ring, and I've been in thousands of rings all across this country, but when you look out at that crowd, what you're looking at, you're looking at Americana. That's what you're looking at. Because that's what makes up America. These are the people that get up and they go to work every day and they buy cars and they buy groceries and they take care of their families and they're what makes this country work. But to go out there and knock them for something that they come to see you do, that's almost knocking yourself. And I don't know. I met Ronda Rousey one time. She was nice to me, and I said hello to her. I just met her once. But for her to say that, I don't know what motivated her to say it, but I wish she hadn't said it because now I've really got a bad taste in my mouth about her. And I mean, it won't matter a hill of beans anyway, but I wish she just hadn't said that.
Is there any way she was working at all, you think, or no?
Well, she said she don't want to come back to WWE. But now, if she was working, it'd be a good one. Because now she's... You know, the thing about wrestling is this, is sometimes... And I've had people tell me this, and they know the whole story. It's sometimes it makes you think, where does the fake stop and the reality begin? I've said that before.
Because
I've had people come up to me when I was doing Zeb Coulter, and they says, "Hey man, you really believe that stuff?" And I said, "Nah, I don't believe it." "Yeah, you do." And I said, "No, I don't." They tell me what to say. No. I can tell by looking at you. I can tell by looking at you. You believe it. You really do. But that's part of the battle. Part of the battle is getting them to, in that certain mindset, that certain mindset of, hey, he's really believing what he's saying.
Right. Absolutely.
And if you get the guy that he can just make you mad just by walking out there, and I've seen some guys could do that. They just walk to the ring, and you would literally hate them. See, Flair had it for a while, but then they kind of started liking him.
Yeah, he couldn't even be a heel, yep.
You know, Lawler had that same mystique about him. He'd go to the ring, he'd want to kill him. Because he could stand, and I told some guys one time when I was in WWE, of course only about 75-80% of them didn't even know who I was. I told him one time, I said, "Guys, I swear to God, I could get more heat standing in the corner just looking at the people than you saw bitches can working for it." And they kind of laughed, but they laughed. He kind of went, "Well, yeah, you tell the truth." Because that's what draws money. But anyway, I'm going to bitch my way off this show here. Okay, I want to answer a little viewer mail. John, you got any questions for me?
Yes, actually, I do. I just want to say this about Rousey, though, real quick before I jump into my question. It would be smart, though, if she obviously maybe needs the money or something. If it wasn't a work, it'd be smart if she did turn it into a work, because then as soon as she comes back, she'll be the biggest heel, you know, in the women's locker room for sure, and she'll be the biggest heel on TV.
Well, it got people talking because she said that for no reason.
Right, yeah, she did a podcast.
Other than to be a butthole.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it kind of... Now, to me, I don't know if she meant it or not. I don't know why she said it. That's the only thing, the only reason I'm bringing it up. Because she, if she went out there and she did portray that she's royalty and the other people are not, people would get hot at her. Now, see, when I was doing Zeb Coulter, it was an entirely different thing. I was talking about immigrants and this and that and the other. And half the people kind of, it's like it is today. Half the people agreed with me and half the people hated me. Now, the closer I got to Texas, the closer that, you know, the heat grew exponentially larger and stronger. I think I may have told this story before. But you get down on that border and your crowd is like 60 or 70% Hispanic. I mean, you're in dangerous territory. So you gotta watch what you say in some of these places, especially about groups like that, because you can get hurt. You really can get hurt. Listen, I want to say one thing that I've been busy this week, John.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I actually got on the phone and called some people that I hadn't talked to in a long time.
Whoa, okay.
And asked them would they consider being a guest on the University of Dutch?
Okay, I like where you're headed. Okay.
And I got a lot of, hey, just tell me when you want me on. I'll be there.
Ooh, who do you got in the chamber? Who you got in that gun?
Well, the one I got in the chamber right now is a guy who I've had in the chamber before. And now if he absconds on me again, I'm going to have to take that chamber, take it out, put a bullet in it. Because he stood me up twice.
Uh-oh, who is it?
It's Abyss.
Oh, come on, Abyss.
Mr. Abyss. And he apologized. Oh, man, something happened. This, that. I got it, you know. So, but he said he'd love to make the show. He's hilarious. He's a great guy. I brought him to Puerto Rico. And I really enjoyed being with that guy. And I was the first guy that booked him in a territory. I was the first guy, and then I got him a second job with TNA, and hell, he stayed there 15 years or whatever it was. So
I got a great Abyss story for you. It's so funny because I just thinking about it just like makes me laugh because it's crazy. So he was at a show, I think it was about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, it was autograph signing in Atlantic City. And there was a bench outside of the convention center where the autographs were taking place. And I'd say maybe the guy was about 5'3". You know, Abyss is probably, what, 6'4", 6'5", 300 pounds. This guy's probably, 5'3", 75 years old as hell. You could tell he was homeless, just beat up or whatever. So Abyss is sitting next to King Kong Bundy, and he's sitting on a bench. And Bundy gets up and walks away, and he goes back in the convention. Abyss is still sitting there, and, you know, we're just kind of BSing.
It's already funny.
The old guy, the little 5'3", homeless, like skinny, 130-pound guy, says, he goes, "Hey, kid, you're sitting in my seat." And I was like, uh-oh, Abyss is going to kick this guy's ass. Holy shit. You know what Abyss did?
He got up.
He goes, "You were right,
I'm
sir.
Sorry. I'm sorry."
Yeah, you're right. He goes, "You're right, sir. This is your seat. I apologize." And the guy's like, "Yeah, get the fuck up. It's my seat. Don't ever sit in my seat again." And Abyss is like, "You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize. You're right. Thank you, sir. It won't happen again." I was like, "Whoa, Abyss, you could have chokeslammed that guy to hell." He's like, No. You got to be nice."
Oh, yeah. That I knew when you said, "What did he do?" I knew he would get up and he would apologize to the guy and say, "I'm sorry." That's the best. That's the way he is.
Yeah.
That's the way he was raised. And, you know, I've never seen him get mad. I've seen him get pissed off sometimes, but not enough to the point where he, you know, because he's really a good guy. He really is. So
I couldn't believe you let a guy a foot shorter than him, like, bully him around. But, you know, he was a senior citizen, homeless and everything else. I mean, obviously he's not going to start a fight with him. But it's just funny to think of, like, this monster going, "Okay, yes, sir, no problem. All right."
And he's so meek, you know.
Yes, yes.
He is a great guy. But he's got some great stories. And we start talking and we start laughing. he's too much. So, guess who else I lined up?
Ooh.
One of the newest recipients of the WWE Hall of Fame. It was last year.
Ooh, are we talking about one of the Rock and Roll Express here?
Ricky Morton.
Yes.
So, and he's got some great stories.
One of the best.
I've rode, I bet, close to a million miles with that guy. And if we took a trip today, we'd get in the car and we'd pick up right where we left off. And he loves jokes. I tell him a joke. And he was a great, great guy. Now, I got some stories that I can't tell, but some of them that I can. Hey, I'm writing, I wrote a story one time about Ricky, and I'm going to put it on my website this week if I can get my website working. I swear to God, my website, I swear to God, the moon landing was easier. I swear to God. I can't get that summit to work, and it kicks me off, and this, that, and the other. But that Ricky, man, I was getting ready to tell a story, and I forgot what I was going to say. But fun guy, really fun guy. Oh, I know, I was going to write a story about him, and the name of it is, "I Swear, Honey, I Never Cheated on You." So you can imagine where that story is going. And he told me this story, and I said, "Ricky, That's the goddamn story. And Ricky's laughing all the way through it. And it was about him. He didn't get caught, but he got, I mean, heavily, you know, the evidence was heavily against him. He never admitted anything, but him and his wife, they ended up getting divorced. So.
Hmm.
But that was him telling her, honey, no. I never cheated on you, I swear to God. But the story, even I was reading it back, I think yesterday, and I was laughing, and I wrote it. I was laughing back at myself because Ricky is hilarious. And I don't know how well anybody knows Ricky, but you can almost imagine him working this out in real time. So I got another one I'm going to tell you about. Not a story, but another guest.
Mm-hmm. Who you got?
The Dark Side of the Ring creator.
Evan Husney.
Evan Husney. I talked to him.
Great guy.
And I saw, you know, they have a, and I just did something for Dark Side of the Ring. And you'll see it coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about the David Schultz when he slapped Stossel.
Awesome.
You remember when that, what year was that?
1985, I believe.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was with David a couple of, I teamed with him for about 6 months. Man, that guy is wide open. He never drank. He never, ever drank. He didn't drink beer. He didn't drink whiskey. He didn't smoke weed. And he didn't take pills. I asked him one time, I said, what the hell are you doing wrestling? he said, I don't know. But he never did any of the things. But what he always had was, he always had an anger issue. And he took that aggression with him to the ring and tamped it down about 2 notches so he could have a match. But if you watch David work, you legitimately believe that he was wanting to hurt somebody. Here's a story that I haven't told. I went to the ring with him one night. It was me and him against Bill Dundee. It's in Louisville, Kentucky at the Gardens, and Rocky Johnson. And some guy at ringside was giving David a hard time. And David said, you want to get in here? The guy said, yeah, I'll get in here, man. He said, well, he opened the rope for him. And I stood back in the corner, as did Rocky Johnson and Bill Dundee. We just stood back. And the guy got up there, and David reached out and grabbed him and beat the living shit out of him. He hit him with a belt. And the guy, I swear, I actually had to go and get David and pull him back. I said, David, stop. The guy was bleeding. The guy was bleeding bad, too. And we left, and it's like one of those almost out-of-body experiences. You're thinking, did that really happen and nobody helped? The cops didn't come in. The referee didn't come in. The other guys didn't stop him. I didn't stop him. I was kind of in shock that it even happened. And then the guy, the last I ever saw the guy, they were leading him back down the aisle to, I guess, to the first aid room. I never saw him again. Nobody got sued. Nobody got nothing. And about during that period, that was when I was teamed up with the Baller and David Schultz, and that's when Lawler had what he called the Lawler's Army. Lawler would dress stupid army helmet, wear stupid army clothes out there. But we went to Louisville one night, and we were working against the Indian tag team, babyface tag team. And they had this young boy named Chewy, who was about 16, and he allegedly was one of the Indians' sons. And a good-looking boy. The girls loved him. He was really a really good-looking kid. So, and his job was, when we would get them selling, he would just start beating the drum. Boom, 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 boom. And after a while, if it's a rhythmic beat, you get with it. Now the people get a little bit pumped up, and they get actually a good way to go into a comeback. So he got them up, and the Indians beat us, and they were celebrating. Of course, us being the dastardly heels we were, me and Lawler in charge, and those two guys were like walking heat magnets. I didn't have the heat anywhere near what they had. I just absorbed a lot of it just being with them. But after they won, they beat the shit out of the two Indians. And the one little kid come in and threw his body over his dad, like, no, you can't touch him anymore. We stood back and looked at him, and you could almost feel the crowd just shift, like, they got quiet, too. Don't you son bitches do it. Don't you do it. But guess what? We did.
Nailed them.
We beat the shit out of that kid, and my God, here they come. They were trying to get in the ring. But when we started punching the kids, I looked out there, and some of the women were crying. The young girls were crying. And, you know, the men out there, they don't like to see their women folk or sisters cry. So now they're mad. It took us 10 minutes to get out of the ring. Because we all backed up in the middle. And somebody would try to come in, and we'd just try to kick them off the edge. And finally, probably didn't take us 10, but it took us well over 5. The police had to come in when they was taking us out. We were ducking and dodging. I remember I hit one guy on the way back because he threw a punch, and I ducked it. I hit him. He had glasses on. I didn't mean to hit him because he had glasses, but he shouldn't have hit me. I hit him right on his glasses. The glasses just went flying. And then we went to back, and everybody was happy. Oh, man, great match. I said, damn, guys, did you see? We almost got killed out there. I mean, I've been asking, how are we? You know, I know the match was okay because we got them all fired up. But anyway, that was a – don't miss, people, the what is Dark Side of the Ring?
On Schultz.
David Schultz. Good guy, too. People just don't mess with him. And I think and the last one, I'm going to make you guess. I used to manage him, John, when I was first in WWF.
Well, there is somebody I was thinking about somewhere around 95-ish that I was going to say that this guy owes you a lot and that he better be up for coming on the show. I was thinking of John Bradshaw Layfield, JBL himself, a.k.a. Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Yeah. He decided to come on. And I saw him on the Brawl for All.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think I was there for that. I'm pretty sure I was there for that. That was 95, too, right? Or 90.
No, this 96. Is 98, Attitude Era, 98.
But I remember John was telling me about it one time. Wow. That was a crazy deal. I mean, the WWEs, they've done some crazy stuff. But I could have told them that. Hang on a minute. There's my Alexa talking to me. Shut up, Alexa. Alexa should be sitting here. I'll be talking. Oh, the time is 10:31. I didn't ask her anything. But, John, he was telling me about that one time about the fight. And, you know, I know Soul Taker pretty well. But you know how you could tell how that was structured? You didn't see Shawn Michaels in it, did you?
No. He was gone at that point anyway, but he wouldn't have been in it. Not a legit type guy.
You didn't see Stone Cold in it, did you?
No, too risky. Way too risky.
And you didn't see Mark Henry in it, did you?
No, too risky for him too, I think.
Or Undertaker.
Way too risky, Yep.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, and the money they were offering probably wasn't enough for those guys.
Mm-hmm. That too.
You know, even if you're a big guy, you go out there against another big guy, and they say, well, you get, I don't know, you get, what were they offering? 2,000 if they won, 1,000 if they lost, whatever.
I think it was 5,000 each win, and if you win the whole thing, you won 75 grand.
Okay. Well, five. But, you know, you get those brain scramble. I don't care. There's no amount of money that's going to recover that. And I think that's why, what was the Dan Severn? He got out after the first. He won, right?
Yeah, he beat Godfather, and then he said, I got nothing else left to prove here. And he hated that they were in boxing gloves and not in the traditional UFC gloves where a wrestler can grab and hold on to you.
But, you know, what I found really distasteful about that, they wanted Dr. Death to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Death would have probably won it if it hadn't been mostly boxing.
Yeah, if they could wrestle, and if he was able to use his hands, no doubt.
But, and they wanted him to win, and when Bart Gunn knocked him out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Then your plan goes all to hell. But I think they kind of really, they got it. I wasn't there. But I think they got mad at Bart for screwing their damn plans up. out, and I don't know where Butterbean came into the equation, but Butterbean, I don't think he's ever been knocked out, has he?
Trying to think if his boxing. I know he might have been in boxing. I think, oh my God, he's like 77-5 or something, but he might have been knocked out once or twice.
But hell, if you look at him, he didn't even have a neck.
Right. Well, his record is like insane. Like he's got like 70-something wins and only a few losses. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, more than likely, he's gonna knock somebody the fuck out.
But you know, I heard a story about that. That when he went back up there, he offered to put Bart Gunn over.
Mm-hmm. Some sort of work, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You ever hear that?
Yes, from Butterbean himself. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he offered to put him over, and what he was looking for, a couple more fights or matches in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was looking for. And here, now I'm gonna do Ronda Rousey. Here you got these fake wrestling promoters. All of a sudden they're turning down, you know, an offer. They wanted it to be real. And oh no, let's because the rest of it, let's be true to our idea. I don't know. Sometimes this business amazes me, and I've been in it forever. All right, John, here's my history lesson for today, and I told you before we went on the air. And I learned this. You know, you can learn a lot. Like when I broke into the business, I would get in the back seat with veterans.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in the business 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And they tell me, shut the fuck up and listen, little bastard, whatever. You know, and because it was ribbon, and it was kidding. And my job was to drive. So they could drink beer, which I was fine with that, because I learned a lot. Because just being in the car with those guys, you know, it was an honor to be there, really. And they were very smart asses to me, but they didn't mean it, and we all knew that. So, but I asked a question one day. I said, "Sir, what is it, you little bastard? What are you on?" And I went, I got a question. What is it? It better be a damn good one. I said, well, where did working in wrestling, where did it first start? You know where it first started, John?
I'm not even sure. No.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's true or not. That's what this is what the answer I got. They told me that working in any kind of physical combat 101 actually started back in the Roman days. And it was a great story. They said, well, when they go out there and when they would wrestle or fight in front of the, and some of them were to fight to the death, but a lot of them weren't. It was just who could win. And sometimes these wrestlers, of course, the wrestlers all stay together. And they would bring them out there and run the big stadium, and they would wrestle. But sometimes if they saw this kid was pretty good, he could be good, they would hold back on him just a little bit. So if they ate him up and they made him look too bad, you know what the emperor would do? He'd give it the thumbs down, and they were gone, probably take him out and kill him. But they would make him look good, just good enough that they could win. And he would still look good. And that was, they told me, the first instance of wrestlers working with each other. So I heard that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if they went out there, and they could really just eat him alive if they wanted to. But they wouldn't. They made him actually look better than what he was. Of course, they would take him to the back and tell him to shut his mouth, because they made him look better. They could have. And they made him be holding to them for not eating him up. So, and they said that was and these guys told me they heard it years ago, and the guys that told them that years ago heard it from somebody else, and it just kept coming. It just went up the line. Now, whether that's true or not makes sense to me, to tell you the truth. They may like this kid in the back, but if they knew if they made him look bad or not good enough to even be in that group, they may even feed him to the lions on the same day. I don't know how that stuff worked. But anyway, that's the old story that they towed me one time, and I've towed this, so I hadn't towed it that many times, really. But I have towed it to some guy, and they look at me and say, yeah, you know, that might have just a little, the truth to it. So anyway,
I got something for you.
Here we go again.
We mentioned it off air, but you said to mention it again on air because you didn't give me the full answer. But I said, what's the top five territories? Not by money or anything like that. I mean, we could figure that out another time. But just sheer entertainment value, sheer like fun, whatever you want to call it. What are the five best territories of all time?
Well, I'll give you my top five. It should be different from
right.
most everybody else. But just for having the most fun and enjoying the fans. You know, wrestlers enjoy fans too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes we go to a town. If the town has hot fans, we're all up for that. But now the building has a lot of energy, and the people have a good time. And you go, you have your match, and the people are screaming and yelling and making a lot of noise. People don't make noise for no reason. I mean, you got to have them a reason. You give them a reason to explode, and they won't let you down. But I say the number one territory, and I don't think this would be a surprise to anybody, was Memphis. Memphis was the best territory as far as fans enjoying themselves and me enjoying them. Because, when you put 11,000 people in that Mid-South Coliseum every Monday night, you're actually doing something. Somebody asked me one time, Dutch, why'd y'all do all those crazy angles and stuff right out in the crowd? I said, well, that's because we wanted to goddamn eat next week. That's why we did it. Damn, we had to give them something. I mean, what do you want to
right.
see it down? Just come see a wrestling match. And that's the beauty about wrestling. You give the people what you think that they're going to like, and so they'll possibly buy another ticket and come back. But I'm going to pick Memphis number one. And let me see here. I'm going to say the next one for entertainment value of fans. Not wrestlers,
mm-hmm.
but I got to go with Puerto Rico.
Okay, I see that.
Another live place. Oh, my God, you hit that floor, and here they come. I mean, they're right on top of you, and loud, very, very loud. And Puerto Rico is very different because when a baby face makes the comeback, they don't get all of a sudden go, wah! They come up. And he throws that punch, and they go down. And then he throws another punch. Wah! Sit down. Next time. Wah! And it's like, wah! Wah! I've never seen anything like it, but that's what they do. And Puerto Rico, and I'm picking them number two, is because of the sheer value that the fans got. Not necessarily the wrestlers, because we were trying to pick us a spot to get the hell out of there because – if you made those people mad, they were about half drunk all the time anyway and able to kill you. So, but I'll pick Puerto Rico number two. Number three is, I think, a hidden gem amongst all the wrestling territories that doesn't get anywhere near the credit that it should get. And I call it the Old Continental Territory.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yep.
It was Birmingham, and it was Knoxville four times. And it was all about Alabama, Montgomery, and Dothan, and Panama City. And the place was just, I mean, even watching the TV, that's what a wrestling show should be. It was good. You knew the people, and they didn't. And I like the way they booked it because I call it don't outrun yourself. Because I've been in a lot of places, bookers didn't know what to do, and they would just outrun themselves. John, if we're going to have a match, and see, WWE does it, they do pay-per-view cycle to cycle. But still, they had 4 weeks in between. I've been in some places, the booker, he would throw 6 weeks of programming into a two-week span, and then all of a sudden, the angle's dead. There's nothing else to go to. But Continental, and the people that ran Continental, I just thought they were brilliant. Ron Fuller, you know him.
Absolutely, yes.
Ron Fuller, he's about 6'10", and he played, he was a basketball player. And he played 1 year at Clemson. That's how I got in. I told him I was a big Clemson fan. I went to Clemson one semester before I got drafted. But and he told me he went to Clemson, and I went, no, you didn't. He said, yeah, I did. And he transferred. I said, well, why did you transfer? He said, well, hell, nothing was happening there. He was just stuck back in those woods, nothing going on. So the next year he went to Miami. I think he finished at Miami. But Ron Fuller, funny as hell. Great worker, a great mind for the business. Him and his brother Robert too, because mm-hmm. they grew up in the business. Buddy Fuller was their father, and Buddy Fuller, I think he was a Welch, and the Welches are the ones who started wrestling more or less in Tennessee. But they knew what they were talking about. But even when you work with them, great guys, a lot of fun, and I actually paid pretty good too, to tell you the truth. My next one I'm going to pick is the Tampa territory, Florida, because they had great towns. They had Tampa, they had Miami, and they had Orlando, and they had Jacksonville, and Tallahassee, and, you know, Lakeland. And when Eddie Graham ran this place, and remind me, John, I need to tell the story on a future podcast. I was in Florida when Eddie Graham killed himself. Very, very sad experience. I mean, I don't want to bring it up here right at the end. But
right.
But in my book, I wrote about it, and I think I pretty much hit it nail on the head. But and Eddie Graham and Buddy Fuller were like I called them great bookers, because Eddie Graham was so good. Even the other bookers and the other owners of other territories, when they got stuck and they needed something to continue onward or something else that would, I mean, a bump, when they needed a bump in business, they'd all call Eddie. He was that good. And they'd give him, they'd say, well, this is what we're doing here, boom, 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 boom. But we've got this match, and this guy's going over, but we need to, now I got 4 weeks, I need to do something with these guys. He'd give them an idea. Now, whether they took it or not, I don't know. But the mere fact that you were held in such esteem by your peers in the other territories, that they would call you and ask for your advice was pretty telling of Eddie's influence and his intelligence about the business. And Eddie was a lot of fun to work with. Hey, there used to be a thing in wrestling that, because Eddie Graham had a place called The Dungeon, and he would have guys, you wrestlers, you ain't shit, you can't do nothing. Eddie would say, oh, no, really? You want to come and try out? Yeah. I'll beat your asses. He said, all right, come down at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday to the office. Okay. He'd come down there. Then he'd bring in Hiro Matsuda. He'd bring in Bob Roop. And he'd bring in somebody else. And he'd bring in, I can't remember the guy's name, Gordon Nelson. Guys who could shoot. They'd bring that guy in there. And they have actually been instances that the guy he was trying to run out, and they would yank his, trying to grab him, you know, he just had shorts on. They'd pull his shorts off, his shirt off, and a couple of times I think some guys ran out in the street naked to get away from him. So they just took him in there and just beat the shit out of him and said, well, this is the fake business that you've been. I mean, how much sense you got to have to go up against a guy weighing 260 and tell him he's fake? I mean, even if he is, he's 260. So, but they called that The Dungeon, and Eddie Graham, he liked guys who could handle themselves. I got to tell this story real quick. I was going into a 7-Eleven one time, and we had worked this show. I called it, and I wrote this story too, Frostproof Florida. And I saw two redneck-looking guys. They looked like Deliverance. They were standing inside the 7-Eleven. And I was going to go in there, and it's about, it was about 10:30 night, matches were over. And so when I went in, one of the Deliverance number one guys opened the door at the same time I wanted to go in. And he just stood there looking at me. So I try to go around him, and he takes a step to cut me off. So a little bit of an awkward silence. And I go the other way, and he takes another step, and I step back. And then I try to go one more time, and he blocks me. I said, I'm going in. He said, no, you ain't. I said, yeah, I am. He said, no, you ain't. He said, I know you. You one of them damn wrestlers, ain't you? I said, yeah. And I said, I'm going in. So right when he blocked me the third time, hey, the fight just broke out just like that. I punched him. He punched back. Boom, 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 boom. And he was a big guy. He had to be about 6'2". He was over 260. And I was a lot faster than him, so I was landing the shots. I just wasn't doing any damage. And he was swinging, but I could, you know, he was slow. I could get under him. So I remember that, you know the old stands used to put the quarter in, you get the newspaper out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yep.
We went up next to that, and we went head over heels on that, and I caught my ear on that bottom brick layer, you know, that sticks out, that holds the glass. I thought I tore my ear off. Then all of a sudden, here I hear the cops come in and the sirens. So they come in there. And I will give the guy credit. The guy said, "What's going on here? Break this up. Break this up. What's going on?" And I went, "Nothing." And the guy looked at me and said, "What's going on here?" Told the guy, he said, "Oh, nothing. We just playing around." That's all he said. And now the guy, I don't know what to do. And he said, "Well, get the hell out of here and get off the streets." And so I left. But he didn't stooge me off, and I didn't stooge him off either. But anyway, but I didn't beat the guy. Now, the guy didn't beat me, but I didn't beat him. I saw Eddie Graham, and there used to be a deal that if you got in a fight and you didn't win.
No, you get fired, right?
They'd fire you. They could. And everybody was saying, "Oh, boy, that guy, I don't know, you might get, I don't know if it's going to happen, but you could get fired tonight." So they got me all worked up. So I saw Eddie at the match, and he said, "Can I see you a minute?" I went, "Oh, God, here we go. I know what's coming." I walked over there, and he says, "What happened?" And it's Frostproof for it. He said, "What happened over there in Frostproof?" So I told him, just like I told it here. And he looked at me, and Eddie had a way of looking at you that was like cut glass. So I thought he was just looking right through me. And he looked at me, and he says, "Kid, work on your punches." Because he kind of liked me, and he walked out. So, but anyway, I'll tell more of the story in a podcast coming up. Okay, the last one I'm going to put up is Knoxville, which mm-hmm. is also back to Ron Fuller and Robert. You know, that was a great, great little territory. They used to run these little towns, only had a population of, say, 2,000 in a town. They'd have 1,200 at the matches. Just pack it out. Because, I don't know, sometimes you go out in the country, they get no entertainment. So when something comes there, they'll go out there and support it. They really will. All right, so, hey, I'm getting ready to wrap this up, but I got some questions here I want to answer. And it's from Mr. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, Puerto Rico, my friend in Puerto Rico. He wrote me and he said, can you answer some questions? Which promoter gave the best payoffs? So I'm going to say two. I didn't work for him that much. But Paul Bosch out of Houston, because he ran what I call an outlier territory. He only ran Houston. And he brought his talent in like an independent promotion. He'd get the Fox, and he'd get Harley, and he'd get Bruiser, and he'd get Brody, and he'd get Abdullah, and he'd get Stan Hansen. Then he would fill it in with the Texas guys. But sometimes when you go to Houston, you know, you can make, and this is back in mid-70s, you know, some guys, you can make $500, $600 in the first match. Main event, probably get $2,000. And this is back, you know, my rent back in those days was $125 a month. Just figured out. Gas was about 60 cents a gallon. So, I mean, that was a pretty good payoff. And the other good payoff guy was Jim Barnett out of Atlanta. You've heard of him.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, Jim Barnett, he paid very well because he called us one day and he said, "Boys," and he was gay, and he was hilarious. So he said, "Boys, I like to pay my rent as well because truck drivers make $500 a week." And he was always fair to me, and he was a good businessman. He really was, and I liked him. One says, "Was Jerry Jarrett a stiff payoff promoter?" I wouldn't say stiff, but some of his payoffs were questionable, I would say. But one thing about a promoter, they always got first count. And we didn't have a union, and we didn't have any way to check what the house was, because we more or less had to take the promoter at his word. Because if you didn't, well, you know, more people wanted the job, and if you created too much of a stir, you know, they just replace you. That's the way it worked. And of course, the rule of thumb, I guess, say the house was, say it was $10,000, a third of that money was supposed to go to the talent. So you're looking at $3,300 to go to talent. And say you only had 10 guys on the card. Well, that means if you paid everybody the same, everybody would make $330 for that one night. Of course, they didn't pay the first match, but they paid the main event. So they'll take maybe give the first match $100, $125, and the main event would make $500-$600. So it's still tallied out to be the same thing, but they got first count. So instead of $10,000, they might tell you it's $10,000, but it could have been $14,000.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
But that $4,000 goes to the promoter, and nobody's the wiser. So that's how that, and that was, you know, even Barnett, I heard, did that later on. But what are my comments about what Lawler said on Raw?
Well, you said that earlier.
I think that, you know, it was overblown, and sometimes we give those people way too much publicity for what they're trying to get out of it. One more question. What was the longest match you ever had?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I put it on Twitter, and it was called the Texas Death Match, Last Man Standing. It was a tag match. I'd been in Texas Death Matches as a single, but I had never been in a Texas Death Match tag team, and I didn't really realize that until I got to the building that day. I said, how does this work? And nobody else had been in one either. They said, well, we just do this, do that. So, you know, if you had two guys, you couldn't go 26 stalls because the people, they'd lose your train of thought on it just watching it. But Lance, at the end of the match, I watched it back. At the end of the match, he says it was 48 or 49 minutes, and I think he was wrong. I know it went over an hour 10 anyway, by the time going through it. It's probably an hour 15, I'm saying. I may be wrong. And we went 26 stalls. That's the longest match I've ever been in. Now, I also, my third year in the business, I went what they call a Broadway. You know what a Broadway is, right, John?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, it was a time limit draw. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's sadly lacking in this business today. That's how I learned the wrestling business. I would go in every night, very green, and he'd say, go 50-minute Broadway, the booker would tell me. The first night, I didn't know what Broadway was. I tried not to look like that stupid. But he said, somebody told me, I said, what's a Broadway? They said, time limit draw, stupid. I went, oh, yeah, I knew that. But that's how I learned to work, because every night I had to go in there for 15 minutes. And he said, I don't want you laying on your ass out there. He said, I want you to get up, and I want you to bust your ass in that 15th minute, 14th minute, like you did in the first minute. He said, now don't let me down. And that's how I learned to work. I bet I did that. Me and a guy named Ted Oates in Georgia, we did that almost a year straight. So anyway, that's how I learned to work. So how was the Puerto Rican environment and the work with
WWC, Jose Gonzalez?
WWC, okay. Well, Jose was kind of a dickhead and was an asshole. And after that happened with Brody, I didn't go back there for 6 or 7 years. And the only reason, a lot of people said, why don't you even go back there? I'll tell you the reason I went back there. Because everything else had dried up. Memphis had dried up. Knoxville had dried up. You know, Florida had dried up. Texas had dried up. And even, and Mid-Atlantic hadn't dried up, but it was WCW. So you either worked for WCW or WWF, but they were full. So if I was going to stay in the wrestling business, I had to go I went down to Puerto Rico. So, but yeah, Jose, I didn't really get along with him that much. But But anyway, there's a lot more to be said about that, too. One more question here. Somebody wanted to know what my belief was on guys who just put other guys over all the time. Because he said jobbers. But see, I never called them jobbers because I never looked down on them because they were there to do me a favor, to do one of the other guys a favor. And I think by putting them down, actually said more than the person putting them down than it said about them, because I always liked them. I treated them as people, and I didn't like anybody else putting them down either, because I used to have a lot of friends who just, that's all they did. They would just come in, or even to Atlanta TV, or even to WWF TV, and just put guys over. And they were always very nice to me. So, and my, I thought a lot of them, and some of them were the shits, believe me. No, I take that back. Some of them weren't even that good. but it had nothing to do with them as a person.
Right.
Because, and I liked them. So, I forgot, somebody wanted to know what I felt about jobbers. Jobbers, I feel like I'm like anybody else. I don't like people that call fans marks. I don't like that because that's disrespecting them. I don't like to call them a jobber because jobber's like it's almost a demeaning term for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I did learn the term enhancement talent.
right, or carpenter,
Well, actually, a carpenter made more sense than a jobber because a carpenter was building something. He was helping build that guy that they wanted to draw money with in there. So, but anyway, that's what I feel about that. I treat people the way they treat me and all these guys that along the way that put me over. And because I put guys over when I first started, they put me over. And then, you know, on the end, you know, you only hit that 8-year run, 5 or 6 8-year run that, you know, you can make any money. And then as you get older, all the younger guys come up, now you're putting them over. Be careful on the people on your way up because you're going to meet the same people on the way down. That's what an old timer told me one time. I always remember that. But, yeah, I've said about my guests. Listen, if you go to my website, DirtyDutchMantel.com, which I'm trying to get up and functional again. If you want to write me, DirtyDutchMantel@gmail. If you want to ask a question, I'll answer it. And Twitter is DirtyDMantel. And on Instagram, where my good friend Francis is helping me with that, and I appreciate that, it's DirtyDutchman1. So if you get a chance to make any of those, I don't think you'd be disappointed. If you got any questions, let me know. And, John, have I left anything out?
You can just follow me on Twitter at @2ManPowerTrip, and of course you can always get us at mlwradio.com, and that's all I got, Dirty Dutch.
You know who I might like to have a guest on?
Cornette.
I'd love to have Jim Cornette on. You know who I'd really like to have on? I'd like to have Cornette and Russo on.
Okay.
No, they'd never agree to that.
No.
Because I think they've offered Jimmy $20,000 to do it.
Oh, yeah.
He did that?
He offered him that. Said, yeah, for a shoot interview that he was going to have them both in, but Cornette turned it down.
I wonder why. Hey, I'd have had hopped all over that. But you know the thing about wrestling, some guys actually get so mad at another guy.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Jimmy's kind of made a career out of it now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
But hey, if you watch Dark Side of the Ring, the David Schultz episode.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Eddie Mansfield?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, he's pretty prominent in that episode. But he gets on Cornette's ass pretty hard. And I think Cornette, if he can catch Mansfield, I think he'll try to beat the shit out of him. So, you know, Jimmy has a little bit of an anger problem, too. I mean, he gets
going.
I said, Jimmy, calm down a little bit. Calm down. He was all upset one day at the Smoky Mountain taping, and he grabbed a guy, and all the guy was doing was pulling cables. And the guy done something to him or something, And Jimmy had him by the throat up against the wall. God damn you, son. I said, Jimmy, come on. I did it. Get out of here. And I told the guy, I said, you need to go off before something bad happens to you. But anyway, I love Jimmy. I love to have him on because he's funny. Have you ever had him on your show?
Oh, yeah. He's one of our best guests. We had him on a couple times. Yeah, he's awesome.
Oh, man. I've been on his show a couple of times. I got to tell you some stories. You know, who was the first guy he managed?
Ooh, good question. Would it be Condrey? Would it be Dennis Condrey all the way back in the day?
That is incorrect.
It's got to be somebody in Memphis, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
Well, actually, it was me.
Oh, there you go. That's easy.
He managed me first, but I wasn't the first person he managed. I was the first guy he managed, which leaves only what? Another, the opposite sex? Who was the first person he managed?
I don't even know.
Sherry Martel.
Oh, nice. See, we got to get him on and talk about this. No, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that, did you?
Nope.
See? Well, he'll tell you. So anyway, hey, listen, I hope everybody enjoyed the show. I enjoyed it. I'm looking for my guest next, hope to start next week. So if you got any questions for any of these people, write me or write John. John, I'll relay them to me. And we'll continue. How many shows have we done so far, John?
This is episode number 6. Yep.
Well, I'll be damned. You know, I did it with a guy one time named Matt Farmer, and I worked with MLW in court about 2 years ago. I don't know how many I did then. I think I did like 20 maybe, 15, 20 or something. But that's a whole other story. I won't get into it. So anyway, fans, join me next week, same time, same channel. Me and John shoot shit. But we haven't said anything really bad about anybody yet, have we, John?
No, we've been keeping it pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, we can't get sued. I don't know how. Has Conrad ever been sued, do you think?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
For what he said?
Oh, I think so.
We didn't hear anything about it. I'm going to find out. I'm going to ask him.
Yeah, I'll ask him. Let's find out.
I'm going to ask him on the goddamn show. I'm going to say, Jim, you need to tell us the truth. Stop this damn bullshit hiding shit from us. So anyway, okay, I want every real American within the sound of my voice to please rise. Put your hand over your heart, and in a loud, clear voice, say along with me, we the people.
The people.
Me and John will see you next week. Take care and stay safe.